Welcome to the autumn broadcast of Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM. Echolocation is a show that is broadcast seasonally on WGXC and Wavefarm Radio at wavefarm.org. Each broadcast of Echolocation features an exploration of the science of bioacoustics and sound, as well as the creativity of environmental art, especially the interpretation and use of natural acoustics in sound art and musical composition. The show dwells at the junction between art, science, and natural sound. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, coming to you from my kitchen porch in Hanacroy, New York. And it's getting pretty darn quiet around here. The opening music from today's show was brought to you courtesy of some walruses, a gray whale, little brown bat, another kind of bat, I'm not sure what kind, but making some echolocation sounds, and a fish called a midshipman that we're going to learn more about and listen more to later on in the show. And all of these sounds are brought to you courtesy of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology Macaulay Library. On tonight's broadcast, we'll learn about the many sounds of fall, explore the little brown bat in our echolocator profile, and take a listen to the singing of bioluminescent fish. In the second hour, we'll dwell in this season of harvest and death, remembering a few talented and prolific artists who passed on to the other side this autumn. We'll learn about the life work of Pauline Oliveros, Margot Pelletier, and Sharon Jones, and listen to selections from each of these artists who created their own unique soundscape. This radio show will be a process of discovery for me, and hopefully for you. You can listen to past shows on the archives at wavefarm.org and follow the show on Facebook at Echolocation WGXC. That song was called Little Rose. It's by a band called the Black Twig Pickers off their album Rough Carpenters. So this show is taking place at the tail end of fall when winter is in the air. And nature is growing very quiet, silenced by long nights and chilly days. The migrating songbirds are long gone, and the native animals are hunkering down for winter. The raucous sound of spring mating and the late summer cacophony of insects has dwindled to the occasional call of crows, ravens, blue jays, and chickadees. And to listen to them this time of year is not to hear them make their mating calls, but more like a conversation that they're having with each other as they gather the harvest and settle in for the dormancy of winter. So as the last leaf descends from the crown of an oak tree and the natural soundscape dwindles to silence, in today's show, we ask the question, does fall make a sound? Well, in my neighborhood, human noise still resounds as deer hunting and firewood gathering dominate and resonate. The name of this show, of course, references that famous quote, "If a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound?" According to Wikipedia, that question was first posed in 1883 in a magazine called the Chautauquan, and the answer provided in the article was no. It was a scientific answer, the author giving a description of sound as a vibration moving out from a source, but claiming that that vibration is only recognized as sound by our human senses. Scientifically, if the question is, if a tree falls in the woods and nobody is there to hear it, does the event create a sequence of waves of pressure that propagate through air? Then the answer is yes. But as the question has been asked repeatedly over the years, the answer has become more metaphysical. Deep thinkers ask if the tree existed at all, if not perceived by humans, and such musings persist, but our understanding of perception has evolved over time. A 2013 article in Psychology Today rejects the outdated notion that human perception determines existence of matter. Quoting from the article, "Different organisms have very different sensational receptors and brain creations. Butterflies can see colors and light waves that are invisible to us. Something is there even if we can't see it. Likewise, owls, with their incredible hearing, can be extremely far away, even out of the woods, and they can hear the objective fact of the tree falling." Studies of owl brains have revealed that the medulla, which is the area of the brain associated with hearing, is much more complex in owls than in other birds. A barn owl's medulla is estimated to have at least 95,000 neurons, three times as many as a crow. They have these specialized brain cells that allow them to orient and locate sound in space. Their faces are shaped like a direct TV antenna that concentrates and magnifies sound waves and sends them up to their incredible ears. Owl consciousness is far more auditory than our significantly visual consciousness. And just to take that one step farther, the thought of a crow or of an owl hearing a tree that falls in the woods makes me wonder, do the trees themselves possess some form of hearing or ability to feel the vibration of a tree falling in the woods? We are learning more and more about trees' remarkable ability to perceive and communicate with each other and other organisms like fungus in the forest floor. So is it possible that if a tree falls in the woods, other trees or even that tree itself hears the sound? Or at the very least, perhaps the tiny beetle larva slumbering beneath the tree bark awakens from the thud? One thing is for sure, trees falling get drowned out by human noise. Microphones placed in remote areas of Oregon's Crater Lake National Park did record sounds of trees falling, but also of pervasive human noise, which is audible nearly all the time. Sounds of airplanes and automobile engines were present even in remote areas. And when we imagine ourselves to be that owl hunting for a meal, listening for a mouse moving beneath the snow, we understand just how loud a sound humans make in the woods. Listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM and Wave Farm Radio. Echolocation brings sound to light.
That song was called Misshaping Introduction from a great band with roots in Hudson, Buick and Gase. And keeping with our autumn theme, that song is off of their EP called Function Falls. It's that time again. It's time for the echolocator profile. This evening, we're going to explore a mammal that flies through the air, the little brown bat. Bats are actually the only mammals that are capable of flight. We think of a flying squirrel, but they really glide. But bats actually fly. And they're an old group of animals. They're fossil records of bats that date back 50 million years. And besides their unique capability of being a mammal who flies, bats are echolocators. The ears of most bats are unusually long in relation to their body size, and there's a small flap on their ears called the tragus, and it probably has a role in the bat's acute hearing and echolocation abilities. Bats are not blind, but they are frequently flying around in the dark, so they depend on their unique sonar system, their echolocation ability, to locate and catch prey during the hours of darkness when they're active. Little brown bats fly around at night eating insects that are caught and eaten while they're flying. They mainly feed over water on small aquatic insects like mayflies and mosquitoes and caddisflies. And these insects swarm over water at night, so the bats can just fly through and catch and eat insects in these swarms. And they have to eat half their body weight in insects per night in order to prevent malnourishment. So it's serious business that the little brown bats are doing to catch their food. The little brown bats send out a steady signal of high-frequency sounds to scan the area, turning their heads from side to side and sending out sound pulses through their mouth. The sound bounces off objects and returns to the bat as echoes. And as they get closer to an insect, they'll send out more pulses of sound to get a very precise idea of where the insect is. And when they can directly find where the insect is located and zero in, they may use their tail or their wing membranes to scoop up the insect and put it into their mouth. And all the time flying very rapidly, they're scooping up and eating insects, and this enables them to consume up to 600 insects in 1 hour. Besides their echolocating clicks, it is thought that the little brown bats communicate with each other using chemical signals, as well as vocalizations that include honking, which may aid in preventing mid-air collisions among foraging adults. Little brown bats are found throughout the northern U.S. and Canada, and they live in colonies numbering in the hundreds of thousands of individuals. The colonies aggregate at nesting places called roosts, and there are several different types of roosts that serve different purposes. There are day roosts and night roosts that provide habitat for bats to sleep and rest. There are hibernicula, which is a type of roost that is occupied during the winter months. And little brown bats may choose buildings, caves, trees, rocks, mines, or even wood piles as roost sites. And they may migrate hundreds of miles to get from their summer habitats to their hibernicula. Little brown bats are polygamous, and males mate with a large number of females. During breeding swarms that take place in the late summer and early fall. And at this time, they will congregate in a succession of caves just before hibernation. And although the sperm is transferred to the female during mating, they actually hold the sperm, and ovulation and fertilization of the eggs are delayed until the females arouse from hibernation the following spring. During the summer months, the females form maternity colonies, and they consist of thousands of individuals, each individual having a single pup that is born in early summer and is fed milk like other mammals. And the little brown bat pups huddle together while their mothers go out to forage insects, and they are capable of flight in about 3 to 4 weeks. And then they must learn to forage for insects and become independent by late summer so they can put on enough fat to make it through their first winter. The relatively low reproductive rate of little brown bats indicates a longer-lived species, and individuals have been found to live up to 30 years long in the wild. And one reason for this relatively long lifespan is thought to be that the bats spend such a great deal of time in reduced metabolic activity during hibernation. Even during the warm months of the year, bats lower their body temperatures on a daily basis and enter a state of torpor to preserve energy. Their heartbeat and respirations will decrease during these periods of torpor, and it's thought to prevent some of the wear and tear on the body, allowing such a small animal to live for so long. Little brown bats have been a very common mammal in North America, but there are some conservation concerns about this echolocator. They are declining partially due to suffering from white nose syndrome, which is a fungal disease that affects hibernating bats and causes death. So, I'm always thankful when I see bats flying at night. Those polygamous, insect-gobbling, long-living, hibernating, roost-loving echolocators are a welcome sight. But by now, they've settled in for that long winter's nap, and I hope they sleep tight. A list of references cited during this broadcast can be found on Facebook at Echolocation WGXC. In honor of the little brown bat, we'll listen to a song by sound artist Maria-Lena Zita from her album Concerts for Bats, an album recorded in a cave in Italy, incorporating sounds made by echolocating bats along with human voice, didgeridoo, stalactites, logs, and bone whistles. We'll hear the piece Sonar. Thank you. You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM and Wave Farm Radio. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, taking you on a sonic journey through our beautiful oral earth. Thanks for joining me. Well, it's time for a segment that I call News from the Sounding Board, which is time to share current articles from the world of bioacoustics, which is the study of animal communication. And there were some really interesting stories this autumn about the songs of fish. The first article that I want to share with you was an article and a broadcast that was published in New Scientist in September, on September 21st. And the title is Fish Recorded Singing Dawn Chorus on Reef, Just Like Birds. And in this article, they describe a study of fish vocalizations that focused on a coral reef off the coast of Western Australia that was conducted by Robert McCauley and colleagues at Curtin University in Perth. And the scientists recorded not just the sounds of individual fish, but of groups of fish of different species singing in chorus at dawn and at dusk. Quoting from the article, which was written by Greta Keenan, Sound plays an important role in various fish behaviors such as reproduction, feeding, and territorial disputes. Nocturnal predatory fish use calls to stay together, to hunt, and while fish are active during the day, to use sound to defend their territory. And a researcher named Steve Simpson from the UK says, you get the dawn and dusk choruses like you would with birds in the forest. So we'll take a listen to the chorus that was recorded in this study. And according to the article, we are going to be hearing the songs of a fish called the black jewfish, which makes the foghorn sound, a grunting call that comes from a species of pteropontid, and a batfish, which makes the ba-ba-ba call, which is quite appropriate for our theme this month, that there actually is a batfish. I didn't even know that. So that's really cool. I don't usually think of fish as singing in chorus, but we're learning more and more about underwater sound. And according to the author's study, Robert McCauley, he says, we are only just beginning to appreciate the complexity involved and still only have a crude idea of what is going on in the undersea acoustic environment. So there's lots to learn. In a related story published on the BBC News Science and Environment website on September 22nd, recounts the tale of how modern scientists became interested in a fish called the midshipman. And the observations of the midshipman were first shared in a paper published in 1924. So we've known about the midshipman song for a long time, but they're super cool. So we're going to spend a little bit of time focusing on the midshipman, and let's take a listen to what they sound like. So that's what the midshipmen sound like, and that audio recording is courtesy of the Cornell Macaulay Library at the Lab of Ornithology. And it's quite a melodious fish, I would say. And midshipmen are really a fascinating fish. They're members of a family of fish called the toadfish. We actually have oyster toadfishes in the Hudson River. And they dwell on the ocean floor and produce sound with their swim bladders, which is an organ that provides fish with buoyancy and stability, as well as functioning as a resonating chamber to produce or receive sound. Midshipmen are a small fish. They're only typically around 6 inches long, but they have many interesting characteristics that are unusual. One of the unusual characteristics is that they are covered with hundreds of luminous spots called photophores that cover their underbellies and are somewhat reminiscent of the buttons of a naval officer's uniform, which is how they got the name midshipman. And these luminous spots glow, and they are created by bioluminescent bacteria. And so this is a glowing fish that sounds like a foghorn, kind of. And that's just the beginning of their unusual qualities. They also come in 3 genders, females, type 1 males, and type 2 males. And all 3 are vocal. They emit short grunts to communicate with one another, but the type 1 males are the ones that sing. And in spring and summer, they head to shallow waters, excavate nests beneath rocks along the shoreline, and sing by vibrating muscles against the side of the swim bladder, which in turn vibrate the surrounding water. And they can hum for up to an hour at a time. And they hum to attract females to the nest, and the females lay their eggs to be fertilized by the type 1 males, but all the type 1 males singing also attracts the type 2 males, which are called the sneaker males because they sneak around, and they're the size of females, which are 8 times smaller than the type 1 males, but their reproductive organs are larger than the type 1 males. So these type 2 males sneak around with their big reproductive organs and swim around with the females, kind of looking like the females, and stealthily fertilize eggs that the female has laid in the nest that the singing type 1 male has dug for his offspring. The hums from these midshipmen can be quite loud, and they can even be heard outside of the water by humans. So these really unusual fish have their singing ability, and they are nocturnal, so they mostly sing at night. And a story related to the nocturnal hum of midshipmen was published in the BBC News Science and Environment section on September 22nd. The story was entitled "Scientists Solve Singing Fish Mystery," and it provides details about a paper that was published in the journal Current Biology, which outlines a study that focused on understanding the chemistry, the brain chemistry of midshipmen singing, that was conducted by a team of scientists from Yale and Cornell universities. And the researchers, Feng and Bass, manipulated the environment of midshipmen and found that keeping the fish in constant light nearly eliminated their humming. But when they gave the fish a drug which acted as a melatonin substitute, they resumed their humming despite being in lighted conditions without the cover of darkness which they would normally start humming in. So they concluded that melatonin, which is a chemical that humans use as well, caused the fish to sing. So that's really interesting that melatonin, which helps humans to sleep, actually helps the fish also have a chemical clock to make sure that it is singing at the appropriate time for the fish, which is at night. And the midshipmen have been used for other studies that compare fish brains to human brains. They're model organisms for studying human speech and hearing because they have homologous brain structures to humans. And one study traced the development of midshipmen's nervous system and brain and found the fundamental structure of the brain circuit was very similar between amphibians, birds, mammals, and humans. So it's often amazing to learn about not only the practices of animals like fish that we don't really think that they do, like vocalizing, as well as the incredible similarities between the brains of humans and fish. There's a lot we can learn from our underwater relatives. The resonance of the midshipman fish vocalization reminds me of the work of accordionist and composer Pauline Oliveros, so I played a selection from her 1992 album Crone Music, entitled Let It Be So. Pauline Oliveros passed away this fall, and we'll explore more of her work in the second hour of tonight's broadcast. But we're just about wrapping up the first hour of this autumn broadcast of Echolocation, and I hope you've enjoyed listening. For a list of references cited in this broadcast, visit our Facebook page at EcholocationWGXC. I would like to thank all who contributed effort, music, sound, and information for this broadcast, including the Cornell Lab of Ornithology Macaulay Library, SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, The Washington Post, National Wildlife Federation, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Vermont Fish and Wildlife Services, Wikipedia, Psychology Today, Treehugger.com, and ResearchGate.net. Music was by the Black Twig Pickers, Buchan Gase, Maria Elena Zita, and Pauline Oliveros. Special thanks to Lisa Thomas, Margot Pelletier, and Galen Joseph Hunter. We'll close this hour with a segment called Ears to the Ground, which features sound walks in locations in Greene and Columbia counties. I'd love to hear from you with submissions for the Ears to the Ground segment, so message me at our Echolocation Facebook page if you have a piece that you'd like me to consider including in an upcoming broadcast. Thanks again for listening. This fall sound walk is all about leaves. The crunch of leaves underfoot and the sound of the wind gusting through the trees, blowing the last leaves down. In the second half of the show, we'll talk about how fall is a time to celebrate those who leave this earth.